I'm just saying, all Santa's power has to be in his beard, because once he shaved it, the Saints' defense has never been the same. I mean, it's like he lost all the magic.
Brian, that's not Santa, that's Rob Ryan.
Oh.
Live from Monster Dome, deep underneath and yet somehow still five stories above Austin, Texas, this is Inside the Locker, the geekiest sportscast you've ever heard.
Welcome, welcome, boys and girls, to Inside the Locker here at oneofus.net. This is the weekly sportscast that is always on Santa's nerdy list. I am your ho-ho host, Brian Salisbury, and at my side I've got my chief elf, my buddy, JC DeLeon.
What's up, what's up?
Which could be both a reference to Elf and My Buddy Doll, which is the most terrifying Christmas gift any parent can get their child at any point in the course of history. That's why they made all of the Child's Play movies.
Yeah.
Because those things are terrifying. And also, making another special guest appearance, visiting for the holidays, my father, the progenitor geek himself, Mr. James Salisbury.
Ho, ho, hello.
Hello. Welcome to the show. Before we get into what promises to be the best show ever, don't even worry about it, I want to remind you that we are available on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can download us there. You can also follow the show on Twitter at ITLcast, and you can like... Let's try that again. That's ITLcast. And you can like the website, facebook.com/oneofusnet. Please, if you're doing any last-minute holiday shopping, remember to use our Amazon links here on oneofus.net. Doesn't just cost you anything different. It just adds an extra step and benefits us greatly. Come to the site, click on our pick of the week, get to Amazon, then whatever you buy benefits us. Thank you so much for doing so. And please do consider becoming a subscriber to oneofus.net this holiday season, or getting a subscription as a gift. There's a lot of goodies available to subscribers, even at the $2 a month level. Before we get started here today, I want to play a little game of show and yell. I want you to show me. I will, Foreigner. That's exactly what I do. What I will do. So the reason I'm proposing this segment is that JC and I have each between the two of us we've been to four sporting events since the last show,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of crazy, because it had been a while since I'd been to a major sporting event at all.
Yeah, and we live in Austin. There are no professional sports teams here.
Which makes it difficult. And my dad actually went to one of the games with me, so we're just going to kind of talk about a little bit the experience of what happened at these games. JC, where'd you go? Who did you see play?
So I went to New Orleans for the first time ever.
Yes, that's right. Awesome. How did you like that?
I did. I liked it a lot. I mean, I'm a big guy. I like eating. So I liked all the food and stuff that was there. But when you look at all the other stuff that I do like doing, I kind of prefer Vegas more still. But I mean, I enjoyed New Orleans, and I really like the environment of the Smoothie King Center, where the arena is within, you know, in relation to downtown and things like that. Something San Antonio can learn a huge lesson from. Like, that arena is in the middle of nowhere. You have to drive out to it, and you have to pay $20 for parking, and you are going to get stuck in a 90-minute traffic jam just to get out of the game. Like, I despise the AT&T Center that the San Antonio Spurs
play. You're saying the Spurs Center's like that, not the Smoothie King.
No, the Smoothie King Center is right by the Superdome.
Can we just keep saying Smoothie King Center? Because the fact that a place like that exists and is actually called that really makes me laugh.
And I walking around New Orleans, not a single Smoothie King in the entire city.
Right?
Yeah, I've never seen one there. I've been there lots of times, never seen one.
They have lots of smoothies, but they're like White Russians and margaritas and hurricanes. They're not like smoothies. They're not healthy. They're not good for you
at all. So it's like a mile away from, you know, Bourbon Street and the French Quarter and all that. So when you get out of the game, you can hop a pedicab and just go right into downtown. Like, it's really awesome.
So the question I have for you is, while you were in New Orleans for the first time, mm-hmm. did you order a round of lap dances for your whole table like you were ordering drinks?
I was with my parents a lot of the time, so there was no shenanigans with naked ladies.
So what you're saying is you did better than I did. Okay, fine. That's just fine. What else did you do, JC? I guess we should talk about the game, which we haven't done yet.
Yeah, so all in all, it was a good, successful weekend. I wanted to go see two games. I wanted to see the Pelicans versus the Cavaliers. And then the Pelicans versus the Warriors, because I really like Anthony Davis, and I wanted to see him. That was really the only fail of the weekend. On Friday, it was the first game against the Cavaliers, and he got hurt 7 minutes into the game.
Ooh.
And was on his way to a great game. It was 4-for-4, put up 8 points like really quickly. He just looked unstoppable until you hit him in the chest. And then he had a chest contusion.
It's like those action figures that, like the crash test dummy action figures, where if you push the button in their chest, they like explode out into pieces.
Arms and legs come off.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
But it was a great experience. I'd never seen LeBron James play in person, and I know that he's you know, he's not old, but he's also not really young either. And he doesn't quite have the dominant games as he used to anymore, but I just wanted him to play a good game. Well, he played a dominant game.
Excellent.
The Pelicans put Luke Babbitt on him. And Luke Babbitt is a really skinny dude, floppy, long hair. LeBron was looking at him the way a lion looks at a steak in the zoo. And LeBron had 19 points in the first quarter. Ended up with 41 points for the game. The Cavs lost by 5 in the end. But, I mean, really, for my first time seeing LeBron James in person, I wanted him to have a great game. I wanted to see an alley-oop. I wanted to see a great dunk. I saw all the things that I wanted to see.
Well, that's the thing, JC, is that a LeBron James doesn't want to be fed. It wants to hunt.
Yeah.
The one thing about LeBron James, I've seen him play several times, is he comes across the court every once in a while. It's like he has this reserve, and he kind of plays within himself in this game, and he's pretty dominant. But every once in a while, he'll actually like come right across half court and then like get the ball, and he's just visually faster than everybody else.
Oh,
it's amazing.
And that's like kind of the, yeah, you lose that a little bit from seeing it on TV unless you're in person, like how quickly a guy that size moves. Like, yeah, it's amazing.
It is amazing.
So you saw the two games. You saw the Pelicans versus the Cavs and the Pelicans versus the Warriors.
And then I saw the Warriors, yeah.
Who by the way, right now, I mean, we've talked about this on the show, but it's gotten to be even more so since then. They've become the real dominant force in the NBA.
Yeah, they, on this particular game, they were riding a 15-game winning streak. They didn't have, you know, the Pelicans didn't have Anthony Davis for this game, so we figured it was going to be an easy game for the Warriors. It was kind of up and down because the Warriors don't have their big man either. But I kind of saw what I wanted to see out of that game, too. I saw Steph Curry have a great game, put up 28
awesome.
Points.
Awesome.
Seeing that dude dribble and shoot as quick as he does, so amazing. And I saw my first, and it's funny, because this game was at 5 p.m., I decided late into my planning that I was going to go to this game because I wanted to see Steph Curry play, but I had to be back in Austin the next day to work at 7 a.m.
Wow.
And so, sure enough, this is the first NBA game I've ever seen in overtime in person.
Oh, no. The one time you need to get out of there early.
Yeah. But,
yeah, that makes sense.
It was still worth it. I would do it again.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, Dad and I went to, the two games, I was only in Indy for about 5 days. But I ended up going to my first ever game at Lucas Oil, which is where the Colts play. The games that I'd seen previously had always been in the RCA Dome, or the Hoosier Dome, as it is affectionately known. So while I was aware and have driven by the new stadium many times, I'd never actually been inside to see a game. And this just happened to be a game against the Houston Texans to decide the AFC South, which is, you know, this year, the last few games has become a really... a hell of a contest because the Texans have played really well and the Colts have played very intermittent football. And so this game was really, really important. I think even if they had won, we might have had a single game lead over them. But that's a really precarious situation for us to be in. So I got to watch the Colts, really grind it out against the Texans and come away with the win and secure their second AFC South division title in a row. And it was a hell of a thing, but Dad, you were there.
It was a great game. I think the Colts played okay,
very very okay. Yes,
I think the Colts benefited from Houston's quarterback going down.
General Fitzpatrick suffered an injury, down.
Broke his leg. It must have been crazy.
It was sort of crazy because the game just sort of stopped. Everybody went over and like, what's going on? Because it didn't look like a massive hit. It just looked like he fell down and broke his leg.
And out comes the doctor with the bourbon and the leeches, and they amputated right there on the field, which is their want.
So I missed that part.
Well, we refer to Ryan Fitzpatrick as the Civil War quarterback.
Right, that makes sense.
We have a Twitter account we set up, and all we do is tweet as if he's, you know, narrating letters from a Ken Burns documentary. So I believe the thing I tweeted out when he got injured was, as my sainted grandpappy used to say around the fire, ow! So that was a lot of but I was really excited to see him play, and of course I was really excited to see J.J. Watt play.
Right, and how did he play?
And he did not disappoint. He had a good game.
Nice.
He was a monster out there. He was constantly threatening. He did get a sack, I believe, at one
two
point.
Sacks.
Two sacks.
Yep.
And then of course I got to see my Colts play, which the players that stood out in this game were not the ones that I expected to stand out. The best performances in the game came from guys like Boom Heron,
yep.
who was kind of our second running back, who was really at the end of the game the reason we won, because right. we were nursing a very tenuous lead, and Boom Heron was at the end of the game getting yards. They're breaking off 9 yards, 10 right. yards, 11 yards, you know, on single runs, and really allowing us to run down the clock and be in a good position to win.
He's a better decisive runner than Trent Richardson, so he is. I think that he actually would be better as our starter, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and then, of course, Hakeem Nicks scored a touchdown, as did Dwayne Allen. I was really surprised not to see T.Y. Hilton score a touchdown, but I did get... He had a couple of big plays, so I still got to do the T.Y. thing, which I think is a lot of fun. It's a great atmosphere. Like, even... I gotta say this. Like, even the Texans fans that were there, everybody was like... There were no fights. Nobody. In fact, there were two Texans fans sitting right in front of us, and then in front of them were some very vocal Colts fans. But every time something would happen well for the Colts, they would just turn around and be like, "Hey, high fives!" And you know, same for the Texans. So it was a very friendly place to be, which I'm not really that surprised because it's Indianapolis and we're not really known as a dickish city. So
that is kind of one thing. I even tweeted about that. I've already talked about how much I dislike going to that Spurs arena. I also dislike Spurs fans. Like, a lot of my friends are Spurs fans, and I love them, obviously. Strangers that are Spurs fans in that arena are awful, awful people.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's all the years of success that have kind of gotten to their head. At New Orleans, I kind of like at the movies, I purposely got tickets, got seats that were on the aisle.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
Which means when people are going to be coming in and out, I'm going to have to get up from my seat, which, you know, whatever. This one guy had a little kid, and... I don't know, but little kids in general are just kind of antsy, I guess. 7 or 8 times throughout the course of the second half, he just kept wanting to go downstairs for something. And finally, at one point, the guy, and I'm wearing a Cavaliers shirt, by the way, in mm-hmm. New Orleans. And this guy was just like, "Hey, man, I'm really sorry. Do you want me to get like a beer or anything? Like, I'm sorry my kid has to keep going downstairs." And I'm like, "No, man, it's fine. Don't worry about it." Like, never would have happened in San Antonio.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was just a great place to see a game. We had excellent seats. We were like, I think, 15 or so rows off the field on about the 20-yard line. It was excellent. That stadium does something really interesting, too, is the way they do sponsorship is that they let companies buy, like, particular sections of the stadium, like, mm-hmm. when you're walking around. So, like, you'll walk in and suddenly be, like, the Verizon Zone, and everything's painted red, and you know, and then there's, like...
The Huntington Zone
is all green. And really, that area kind of looks like the Seattle Seahawks colors, which is weird.
Yeah, it's green colors, yeah.
And then there's, like, you know, there's like, a part of it devoted to, you know, the Indianapolis 500, and there's, like... It's just a really cool place to walk around. They've really done a great job with the design of it. And I gotta say, I really think it's a class move on their part that they have these big banners up for, not just like his jersey or something hanging from the rafters, but they have these big wall mosaics of Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he may not be on the team anymore, but we wouldn't have this stadium if it weren't for Peyton right. Manning. And I think it's great that they acknowledge that. So
that's cool.
We had a lot of fun there. Good times. And then the next night, I had floor seats to watch the Pacers take on the Lakers. I have never had floor seats to anything. Like these were like literally like 3 rows off the floor. It was crazy. Like if the mayor had been there, he would have been sitting in front of me, like right in front of me. And it was a blast. And it was really cool because obviously I like the Pacers. And then to see people like, you know, JC got to see LeBron James play. I got to see Kobe Bryant play. I got to see Carlos Boozer play. I got to see Jeremy Lin play.
Swaggy P.
Swaggy P, who is as stupid on the court as he is on Twitter. I must say, he is not a smart player. He would do things all the time. And I'm just like, where are you going? What? That's not even your basket. What are you doing? It was really, really cool. And the thing that I was a little scared because the Pacers were on an 8-game losing streak going up against the Lakers. But I had hope because the Lakers have not been a good team in, I think, probably 2 years.
Right.
Is a fair amount of time to assign to it. And right out of the gate, the Pacers started scoring. They didn't, I think they went on like, I think it was a 10-0 run to start the game. And sure enough, ended up handling them the whole game and winning by 19. But I gotta say, the difference between Texans fans at the Lucas Oil Stadium and Lakers fans at, okay, what is it? Bankers? What's it called now?
Bankers Life Fieldhouse, I think.
Because it used to be Conseco Fieldhouse.
Right.
And now it's Bankers Life Fieldhouse.
Same company, just different bankruptcy different name.
Okay. Fair enough. There were so many Lakers fans. So many Lakers fans that I felt like we were the away team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was obnoxious because every single one of them was wearing the same jersey. Like, I'm not one of those guys that's easily calls bandwagoning, but when the only jersey you can think to buy on a team that basically has its own all-star lineup is Kobe Bryant, and you're living in a different city than LA, I'm sorry, that's bandwagoning. That's exactly what that is. And all they would do the whole game is cheer and scream anytime he got the ball. And oh my God, the one time he dunked, you would have thought they had just won the game, despite it was like, okay, that was a great dunk. You're still down by 27, but yeah, sure, let's celebrate that. They were just obnoxious. Like, they would not stop. Like, every time that someone missed a shot, oh, that was a foul. I'm like, he was wide open by himself. Who fouled him exactly? they could not accept the fact that the Lakers are terrible.
Yeah.
But what surprised me the most is that they were surprised by it. I was like, really? You're surprised that the Lakers can't play worth a shit? You're surprised that their shooting is awful? You're surprised that nobody cares to get a rebound? You're surprised that Kobe is yelling at all of his teammates and the referees throughout most of the game? Because he was doing that a lot. At one point, he yelled at, I think it was Swaggy P, you just hear him go, no! And Swaggy just turns around and he just points backwards like, you're not supposed to be there, you're supposed to be there. I was like, well, I'm glad somebody's coaching, because meanwhile, Byron Scott, who is a former Pacer, by the way, was sitting on the bench with his cheek in his palm, and he never got up. Never stood up once. Didn't do anything.
He's been a good coach before, too. I'm just like, he's even in interviews, he just sounds so defeated. Like, one of the funny stories from last week, as Kobe was about to break Jordan's record, a reporter went up to him and told him, like, hey, isn't it great that Swaggy P wants to be the one who passes Kobe the ball when he passes Jordan? And Byron goes, how's he going to do that? He never passes the ball.
Oh, nice. I think it's, he's kind of like a parent has lost control of his children, and he's like, I give up. Yeah. I just give up.
And it was clear that everyone had kind of given up in that game, except the bandwagon fans. Yeah. I would have given money to any of them and be like, name one other person in this lineup. I dare you. Name one other person on this team.
But, man, you saw a doozy of a Lakers game, too, because I remember when you were there, I was just out of curiosity. I was following it. I couldn't watch it for too long because the Lakers are dreadful. But, yeah, at halftime, it was 60-27. Would have been 60-21 had Kobe and I believe Wesley Johnson not hit like garbage time threes right before the half. In that quarter, they scored 12 points. Keep in mind, they needed those 6 points to make it 21. So they essentially scored a 6-point second quarter.
Right? Yes. Like, yeah. Entirely.
Awful. Yeah.
And the only reason that it was as close as it was at the end is because for some reason the Pacers decided to make the very end of the game 3-point shot practice. And Reggie's not there, so there's not a lot of great three-point shooting going on. But I was following, like, we had just left before the fourth quarter, and I was watching it online. It was like, misses a three-pointer, misses a three-pointer, misses a three. And I was like, what are you doing? Just drive down, put up a layup, and let's just put this game to bed. In fact, I think the only real defensive work going on against the Pacers were the Pacers themselves going too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they ran those, like, full court rundowns, like it was the last few seconds and they had to score. It was like, you're up by 25, like, slow the game down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a great place to watch a game. They had, craft beer stands, not just the regular stuff, but like, oh, here's some locally brewed craft beers, which I thought was really good. I do have one complaint, and JC, you've probably been to more NBA stadiums than I have, so maybe you can tell me if this is something that happens at all of them, but they have this system for, like, when you go up and you buy a regular crappy beer, they have this system at Bankers Life where they put the cup down onto like a little actuator and it fills up from the bottom.
Hmm.
And then a magnet, they take it off and a magnet holds the bottom of that cup to get. Here's the thing though. It's not like they take a lot of care with it. So when I was sitting there drinking my beer, all of a sudden it just starts pouring out the bottom of the cup.
Huh.
And I was like, it was like a comedy. It's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Like, the beer is just flowing out from the bottom of the cup. And it's because the little magnet had, I'm like, what is the purpose? What is the point of the actuator system versus a regular tap? It seems like a recipe for disaster. And they ended up giving me a free beer because of it. Then I can't imagine I'm the first person this has happened to.
Yeah. I've never seen anything like that. I know that. I thought you were going to talk about some, like, weird beer rules. Like, they can't, ever since the Malice and the Palace, like, they don't serve beer in the fourth quarter.
Oh, right.
And
that could be true.
And, yeah, so
I think actually, as we were leaving, which was right at the start of the fourth quarter, I did hear a lot of last call, last call, last call. Yeah, yeah. So I think that is correct still. But hell of a place to see a game. Great seats. Awesome to see the Pacers snap their losing streak. I still enjoyed watching people like Carlos Boozer and Jeremy Lin and Kobe Bryant play because, you know, and being that close to them, it was fantastic, but
I would say the other thing about sitting in those particular seats, since I've sat there before too, mm-hmm. I mean, you realize there's a lot of talking going on in the court because you see on TV, but you don't realize how really truly how much talking is going on. And when you're sitting there and you can actually hear the conversations, I think that's a new little nuance that's kind of nice to see when you're going to the game.
Yeah, and Kobe was yelling at the refs way more than Byron Scott.
He gets away with a lot.
He sure does. Well, that's going to do it for our little show and yell segment. Thank you for indulging us there. And we've got a really festive show for you this week. I mean, so much so that we're going to forego our usual format. So in this show, for all headlines, all awards, and whatnot, we're going to play a little game called What We Want for Sportsmas. This song, Jesus, very apropos, but one of my least favorite Christmas songs of all time. Damn you, Mariah Carey! Anyway, we sent out a survey to some of the most prominent sports figures in the country, and here's what's atop their wish list for the holidays. Jim Harbaugh wants a Wolverine's hat. In case you didn't hear about this, over the weekend, the 49ers, who went to the NFC Championship last year, were eliminated from playoff contention because they suck. Like, their year has not been productive, and there's been a lot of talk about this being Harbaugh's last year with the team. Some people suggested that maybe he was going to be traded. My theory was that I think Tom Coughlin's probably going to get fired, and he might go to New York. However, there's been a little... here's the rub, is that someone close to Harbaugh says that Michigan, the University of Michigan, has made a six-year, $49 million offer for Harbaugh to come be their coach, and that he's currently considering it. Early reports were that he wasn't interested in the job, and I'm sure once that number got thrown at him...
Yeah, I think when asked about it, his response was, a doy.
Yeah.
$49 million.
Huh. So how likely do you guys think it is that Harbaugh will be the new Michigan's Wolverine coach next year? First of all, you know, before we even get into that, what's the percentage of chance that he keeps his job in San Francisco?
Well, I mean, so many people are, and it's the sort of thing with, like, tampering rules. Like, nobody can admit they've talked to him or that they are, but, you know, the casual talk amongst reporters on anything, it's a done deal. Like, nobody's talking about the possibility of, maybe they can come back and fix it. No, he's done.
Right.
They're not going to reconcile. This breakup is happening.
Yeah. It's so weird. And yeah, I mean, it's just because he's a little difficult to deal with.
He gets mad about a lot. Yeah. Like, everything.
He's very intense.
Yes, he's very, very intense.
So he's lost control of his team. That's the big thing.
Yeah,
and yeah, people are blaming the regression. That I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's a regression or if everybody just whiffed on Colin Kaepernick. But
yep.
I think everybody just whiffed on Colin Kaepernick.
That must have been hard for you to say, and I appreciate your honesty, Jay-Z.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I was
speaking of breakups.
Oh, I mean, if I was the only one, no, everybody whiffed really badly on Colin Kaepernick.
So it's pretty much a done deal. He's not going to be with the Niners next year. But is Michigan going to be where he ends up? And if so, is that a good fit for him?
I mean, that's another one where people kind of talk about his intensity. And I've heard people say, well, there's no way he's going to run with his tail between his legs from the NFL when his brother beat him in the Super Bowl. Like
the Harbaugh. Yeah, that's right. That's the crazy part is like, not only did they go to the NFC Championship last year, they were in a Super Bowl the year before that.
Yeah.
Like, in the one-year drop-off with this team has been monumental.
And there's not a real good explanation other than quarterback play. I mean, it's not been very good. So, I don't know. I don't really know. I just think he'll end up in the NFL. I think that's what he wants to do. I mean, I think the money may be better at Michigan, but I just think he's going to end up at the NFL somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that could very well be. I mean, there is the certain amount, I think, as JC mentioned about the pride thing, where, you know, it may seem a little immature, but it's like, you don't want your brother to beat you and stuff at the exact same job.
Yeah, and maybe NFL teams can't quite offer, you know, the same type of contract that Michigan can, but at the same time, in the NFL, he's not going to have to travel around the country doing recruiting.
Right.
Just all the extra stuff that college coaches have to do. Like, I think coaching, to me, it seems like coaching football in college is way more stressful than coaching in the NFL.
It's different. It's way different. That's for sure.
Well, it seems like there's more money tied up in it, which is a really odd thing to say, considering it's supposed to be not-for-profit. But I'm pretty sure there's more money tied up in college football than there is in the pros. And the other thing I think is interesting is, you know, we talked about the sibling rivalry angle, and it kind of reminds me of, like, Ridley Scott, Tony Scott. Because, like, I think they're both talented, and Tony Scott, obviously, the late director, was talented, but I think if you look at their careers, there were definite points where one was doing really well and the other one was kind of drifting along with mediocrity, and then they would swap, you know, and I think that's kind of what's going on here with the Harbaughs, is that you had one of them doing really well. You had Jim out in Baltimore doing really well. Or am I getting that backwards? Wait a minute, hold on. Jeff in Baltimore. Jim in Baltimore? I don't even remember which.
John in Baltimore.
John.
John? Yes. John. Okay. So, I completely lost the train of what I was thinking about.
John and Jim.
I guess that train got away from me because it's unstoppable. What? That's a Ridley Scott joke. Nope, that's a Tony Scott joke. See, I'm still doing it. I'm still messing this up.
It makes you wonder what it'd be like now if Tony hadn't tragically passed, because like Exodus recently is a Ridley Scott movie.
Yeah, it's not good.
A big giant piece of crap.
It is. It is. That's exactly. It's a big giant piece of crap. But it's like in 2004, Tony Scott did Man on Fire, and in 2005, Ridley Scott did Kingdom of Heaven, which when it came out was not good. It wasn't until the director's cut of that movie came out that it was really worthwhile. The theatrical version, you know, I wonder actually if that's what's going to happen with Exodus, Gods and Kings, because Ridley Scott has said that his movie, like the movie that he made, was like 3.5 hours long. And it's like, that's not how long the movie I saw was.
Yeah.
So JC is dubious. He does not think even with the extra time that it's going to
not
be
like Lord of the Rings.
No, it's not going to make it any better.
But they added one other thing, is John and Jim's dad was also a very successful coach at Western Kentucky. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
In the MAC.
Yeah.
My Alma Division Conference. Yes. Mm-hmm. My Alma Conference. But yeah, no, I think he probably will end up at Michigan. I think that he might see that as a step backwards. But with that amount of money, and it's still a big prestige job, it's probably a bigger prestige job at this point than being the coach of the New York Giants.
Yeah.
Is to be the coach of the University of Michigan. And Brady Hoke, who I should, you know, still have a lot of respect for, I've kind of lost a lot of it. He was Ball State's coach when I was in college there. But the whole thing about not only just his losses, but the whole thing about sending in a quarterback who is clearly concussed, like I think Michigan did the right thing by getting him out of there. And I think Harbaugh with his intensity might snap a little bit of life back into that program. And, you know, with the way that Ohio State literally limped into being the division champion or the conference champion over there, I think his intensity would really benefit that team and that conference. So we shall see. But moving along the list of the things that we want for Sportsmas, the Bears want a visit from Santa Clausen. Oh, yes. And that's that joke, I'm going to give credit. That joke was my dad's.
Yeah.
Because the apple does not fall far from the tree. And then you want to kick the apple into the river because it keeps making puns.
I do what I can.
Jay Cutler, who is statistically, I heard, having his best season, but the Bears are terrible. Yeah. So it doesn't really matter. Has been benched for former Notre Dame quarterback Jimmy Clausen. Hey, everybody, we have a Jimmy Clausen sighting, because I completely lost sight of that guy after he entered the NFL.
Going to the game in New Orleans, I learned that the Pelicans is where Jimmer Fredette plays. And
please say that name one more time.
Jimmer Fredette.
Okay, sorry. That sounds like one of Santa's elves.
Yeah. And
where is Jimmer Fredette?
To me, like the NFL equivalent of Jimmer Fredette was like Jimmy Clausen, like really good in college and kind of got to the pros and nobody really
didn't work.
Clearly didn't work. But hey, Jimmy Clausen plays for the Bears, in case you didn't know.
We didn't, because he's Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah.
But this the thing about Jay Cutler is, you know, and let's just talk in terms for a second of fantasy football.
Mm.
Jay Cutler is one of those quarterbacks who's terrible, but gets a lot of garbage time points.
Yeah,
and he like there are a lot of fantasy football players that have ridden on the Cutler train because they know that, you know, the very last stop, he's going to get points that don't matter. And he's been doing that, but even those have started to dry up. And I think that now that there is no way the Bears could possibly make the playoffs, I don't know if I see this more as a, we need to go a different direction at quarterback, or a, we want to rest Cutler because there's no reason to get him injured right now. So which do you think this move is?
I mean, I think it's a combination of both. I think the Bears are in the midst of, and we were just talking about Jim Harbaugh, I think the Bears are in the midst of having to make a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, because Jay Cutler is still a quarterback that has a lot of talent, I think at this point it seems like they're ready to just cut bait and pay him what they owe him and let him be somebody else's financial problem. Because maybe they bring in another coach, or maybe Jimmy Clausen can just be the game manager type that... Because when you have the weapons that they have, like maybe you don't need a quarterback with the talent of Jay Cutler. I mean, you just need a guy who's not going to throw it to the other team.
Yeah, that's the problem. They get down 28 points in the first half, and it's like, sure, he gets a lot of fantasy points in the second half, but, I mean, they're just struggling.
Yeah, and what Jay Cutler falls back on and what got him in the league is he's got an incredibly strong arm. Right. So when he panics, he's just going to chuck it downfield as far as he can. Well, that's where safeties are.
Like, into the no man's land where the safety monsters live.
Yeah.
That's where you don't want to be throwing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dad, what do you think? Do you think this is them, like, wanting to, like, making a clear sign that they're ready to make a change at quarterback? Or is this just another protect your investment kind of move?
I really think they're lost. I think they're just going to – they just want to try something different and see what happens. See if Clausen's able to manage the game more effectively, you know, not get down 28 points early and see, you know, how he can do. I don't think that the coach, the Tressler and – Cutler are going to be on the same field next year. One or the other is going to have to go.
Right.
I would suspect Cutler's going to be someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the thing with him that seems pretty obvious to me is he's not real coachable. He just seems to live on his talent. He's better than Jeff George, but he reminds me a lot of him. Hmm. Where he had a great arm,
but a very bad attitude.
Just bad attitude, and just didn't do well. That.
No, that's a good point. Yeah, he's definitely. I mean, when you have an entire Tumblr devoted to your apathy face, it's not a good sign. It's not a sign that your head is in the game. It's not a sign that you're actually of benefit to your team. And yeah, no, I agree with that completely. I think they are a little bit lost.
It's like we make fun of Eli and the face that he makes every time he throws an interception, but at least you can gather from the dumb faces that he makes that he cares.
Right. He's disappointed in himself.
Exactly.
Jay Cutler's trying. Oh, did we lose? Okay, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the talent that the Bears have on offense with Forte and Jeffries and
Brandon Marshall.
Yeah. There's no way that they should be as bad as they are.
Especially not in the NFC North, which I will give them credit, has become a better division with the rise of kind of Megatron and Stafford being effective at Detroit. And then Green Bay obviously has come from behind. They had a very slow start the season, but they've really been dominant of late. But still, I think especially in that division, they should be a force. They should be in it every single year. And the fact that they're not is very troubling, especially the weapons that you mentioned that they have. So I think Cutler's going to end up – I think it's going to be the same thing that happens every year. He's going to end up in Oakland, and then he's going to wash out.
I just hope
he doesn't. Like the last stop on the way out the door.
I hope he doesn't end up in Miami. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they have a lot of faith in Tannehill. I think the Dolphins have a lot of faith in Ryan Tannehill. You know, whether it's earned, I don't know. But
he's sort of on the fence, I'd say. Some people like him, some don't. I don't know. They're still looking for the Dan Marino prodigy.
They need a franchise quarterback in general.
Right.
Like, they've had almost as many quarterbacks over the last 12 years as Cleveland has.
Right.
And Cleveland has a quarterback carousel, which we'll get to momentarily. But another interesting move might be if the Arizona Cardinals pick up Jay Cutler, because they do, like, I think they have a lot of faith in Carson Palmer, but he's injury prone. I mean, the contract they gave him is indication that they do have faith in him. But with him being injured and Drew Stanton being injured, like, they turned what should have been an easy walk into the first seed in the NFC in the playoffs into, gee, I really hope they make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has been that catastrophic a turn for them, and it's mostly due to injury.
You mean you don't have any faith in Ryan Lindley?
I don't even know who that is. I thought maybe that was a cast member on Vampire Diaries.
He's gone 181 pass attempts without a touchdown to start his career, which is a record.
Oh, there you go.
He's got a record, guys. He's got a record. Well, moving on down the list, the NHL for Christmas this year would really like a cure for the mumps.
Mm.
JC, I thought the mumps is something you got at camp when you were 12. This is a real adult thing now?
This is a real adult thing that's been affecting a lot of the NHL, but nobody really cared until it affected Sidney Crosby, which is the best player in the NHL.
I didn't know Penguins could get the mumps, apparently. Yeah. I didn't learn that on Happy Feet. And see, there's so many things that movie doesn't teach you. I'm really disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a weird, funny thing. I mean, people are kind of still gathering information on kind of how it happened. Like, at this point, all really NHL teams can do is be like, oh, you got the mumps? All right, sit down. Like, there's not a whole lot they can do.
Yeah.
And the weird thing, you know, the mumps is a very serious thing as an adult. It, you know, it could cause you to be sterile, and it's a lot of bad things that can happen getting the mumps, and it's very strange. But I do think that over the past, I don't know, 10 years or so, they stopped doing some of the vaccinations for it, and I think that's caused a problem.
Do you see what you have wrought, Jenny McCarthy? Do you see now what your foolish ways gets us delayed hockey games? That's, well, The worst things, too, but mostly the delay in hockey. That's what we're really upset about. This is weird. This is really weird to me. I thought missing teeth was the biggest health problem you had to worry about as a professional hockey player.
Yes.
But now mumps have come in. I will admit, I don't even really know what mumps are. I'm not. I know it's going to sound really incredible, and you guys may not believe this, but I'm not a doctor, so I don't actually know what the mumps are. So I'm going to look it up. I'm going to use my friendly neighborhood Wikipedia and jump on over to the Inside the Locker Mayo Clinic. Apparently, mumps is a viral infection that primarily affects the parotid glands, one of three pairs of saliva-producing glands situated below and in front of your ears. So there you go. There's your now. The more you know. Imagine a star flying above my head. Yes. Yeah, so hopefully, the NHL will figure out what every parent has figured out over the last 100 years of how to vaccinate against the mumps. So good luck there. Moving on down the list, the Pacers this year, well, they want one of two things. They either want a bargain or at least the ability to be called Indian givers. So, JC, I hear that someone that I was actually glad to be rid of may be back into our lives as Pacer fans.
Yeah, I was going to make Lance Stevenson a retired of the week, but this story is just too funny to gloss over. So, throughout NBA free agency, which we covered a lot this summer, most of which while you were in San Diego at Comic-Con.
Most of them you were at Comic-Con.
Lance Stevenson was one of the, you know, he had a good playoffs, proved that he could get under LeBron's skin. A lot of people thought he earned himself a lot of money, and the Pacers offered him 5 years, $44 million.
This is a decent contract, to be sure.
It's a very good contract. Lance Stevenson said, no, I think I'm worth more down the road. I'm going to take a discount and go to Charlotte.
I'm going to take my talents to Charlotte.
Yeah, 3 years, $27 million, which per year is an increase of $200,000 more than what the Pacers were giving him. Well, he gets to Charlotte, and he kind of stinks.
Yeah, funny story. Charlotte, not the best place to hone your talents.
Yeah, and so Charlotte has put him on the trading block, and here come the Pacers saying, hey, we'll take him at the discounted rate he gave himself.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it's kind of a slap in the face. Yeah.
And I don't know if in that scenario Lance Stevenson can be like, hey, well, can I get the 2 years that you were going to give me?
Yeah. Can I renegotiate again?
Yeah, then the Pacers would be like, no, sorry, bro, our hands are tight.
Right.
Like, you gave yourself a discount. That's what you got.
Yep, and now we're buying him back from the bargain bin.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, in essence, it's the same per year. But, yeah, it's only going to cost them 3 years of investing their time as opposed to five, which, you know, they may want to do. And they may get him back. Since he's familiar, he'll play really good once Paul George comes back and they get a good draft pick. Yep. Maybe they'll cut bait again.
Yeah. Do you think that the Hornets are ready to get rid of him because he blows?
No, my.
Right in LeBron's face.
Yeah.
See, I don't know what's more embarrassing, that or the sleepy time, I'm cheating at heads up, seven up because I'm a child flop that he had in the playoffs. Like, it when you're a player who hasn't even really been a name for that long and people are already like, oh, I don't know which is his most embarrassing moment of that year. That's kind of why I don't want him back. Like, he's a decent player, but he's such an idiot.
Well, you know, he's a great defensive player and he's a decent offensive player. But he is a weird dude. And if you actually watch the Pacers and when he was playing and just kind of keep your eye trained on him, the things that he did on the court were just mind-boggling. I mean, it was just bizarre. And I don't even think I think it's sort of intimidating the other players because it's like, this guy is so weird. I don't know what to do.
Kind of the Ron Artest thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
The meta world piece, Panda Bear's friend.
Yeah.
What's his name now?
Panda's friend. Yeah. Speaking of Lance Stevenson, I want to ask your dad this just because I like people's reaction to this question. So, Lance Stevenson,
yes.
He has a brother. Do you know who his brother's name is?
Is it Lance?
His brother's name is Lance, spelled L-A-N-T-Z.
Oh. So, I wonder what the nickname was as they were growing up. L1, L2, or
what are they, PlayStation controller buttons, L1 and L2?
I don't know.
That's insane. Bizarre.
I thought we covered that.
No, we have. Okay. We have. It just makes me laugh every time because it's like, how lazy are your fucking parents? They give you the name Lance. That's okay.
What should
fine,
we name whatever. Him? I don't know. Lance last time. Let's just do it again.
Lance 2, the second coming. Oh, my goodness. Well, see, that I think is, in a nutshell, Lance Stevenson.
That's where the guy comes from.
Perhaps the environment he grew up in.
True. Turning a little bit away from the world of sports, but something that broke today that I feel like we really need to talk about. For Christmas, North Korea really wants a sense of humor. Because right now they don't have one. If you guys, there's no way you haven't heard about this, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. So this movie, The Interview, that stars Seth Rogen and James Franco, was written by Seth Rogen and Evan
Goldberg
yeah. who also wrote Goon. Which is a movie that, you know, that we really love. And of course, this is the end.
Right. And then the two of them together also did Superbad.
That's correct. So it's like, this is a movie that I was kind of looking forward to based on the pedigree of the people that have worked on it, but the concept itself seemed a little bit of a stretch for me. It was that Rogan and Franco played two pop culture, like interviewer TV host guys that are invited to do an interview with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un because it turns out he's a fan. So the CIA goes, well, you can do the interview, but we want you to assassinate Kim Jong-un. So the joke is that they're not assassins. They're these kind of hapless nitwits. They're kind of like spies like us almost right. a little bit, where they're sent over to do this and just kind of making fun of the whole North Korean situation and how tense things are. Well, it kind of pissed North Korea off. And a couple of weeks ago, we talked on The Breakfast Pub, which is our subscriber exclusive Monday morning news show. You should all become subscribers. About basically that there had been this big hack, like the Sony Studios computer networks had been hacked by this group calling themselves, I believe, the Guardians of Peace, but claiming it had something to do with North Korea. They hacked in and divulged all this sensitive information, and it was connected to, or it was supposedly connected to this movie, The Interview. So the FBI got, or the CIA got involved because it's like, oh, North Korea is hacking our studios. That's weird. We're going to investigate that. Well, things have escalated. And just tonight, there was supposed to be a press screening of the movie, The Interview. And over the course of the day, what happened was, first, we heard about these threats, these vague threats from this hacking group that were like, not only threatening Sony executives, family members, threatening anyone who goes to see the movie, which I'm like, guys, I know you're technologically advanced. There's no fucking way you could possibly track that. And then the other thing was that they were going to, they made a reference to 9/11, like, you know, don't pay to see this movie. You know, remember what happened on September 11th. And so everybody lost their shit, and all five of the major theater chains decided to pull screenings. They're not showing this movie at all. I'm not talking press screenings. I'm talking they're not showing this movie at all anymore. And a couple hours later, here comes a statement from Sony. Okay, we're not going to release the movie on Christmas like we were planning to. So these terrorist threats have effectively killed this movie, mm-hmm. which I find really ridiculous for a couple of reasons. One, I thought we were a nation where we couldn't let the terrorists win, and we've clearly let the terrorists win on this one. And secondly, as somebody pointed out on Twitter, did no one see the beginning of Naked Gun? Remember when that movie came out and it was just Leslie Nielsen beating the shit out of every major dictator on the planet?
Yeah.
We're still here. Like, nobody died. No country was bombed. Like, the earth didn't get set on fire. Like, it's fine. Chill out. And what they've effectively done now is taken The Interview from a movie that people would have seen, would have done fairly well at the box office, and then never been talked about again, to a, like, political sideshow that now is going to be talked about on every major news network around the world, and people are going to be jumping over each other for the chance to see this movie. They have turned The Interview into one of the biggest comedies of all time, at least in you know, by virtue of its importance or the buzz surrounding it.
They should have taken a lesson from the Escape from Tomorrow people. Like, Disney just let that movie, just didn't talk about the movie, didn't mention it, and kind of like they anticipated, nobody really heard of it.
Yeah.
And so, with this one, I mean, you know, the names involved with this one are more famous, obviously, but, yeah, like, I don't know. If you had asked me, I think some of the more, if you're going to be concerned about offending North Koreans, like, some of the more offensive, like, bits and movies, or all of the Red Dawn remake.
Yes, the entire Red Dawn remake.
The comedy bit in G.I. Joe Retaliation where the imposter president was basically just ripping on North Korea for a good 5 minutes.
Or the entirety of the movie Team America World Police.
Why is everyone so fucking stupid?
Like, I don't understand that. Like, here's what I think is going on. There have been rumors, apparently, that Kim Jong-un hasn't been seen for a while, that he's maybe in poor health. I think this is a move where he's just doing this to like prove that he's still a strong, like, oh, I'm still here and I'm still a strong leader. Look what I'm doing. I'm getting these movies pulled. And so it's like, okay, well, we'll let him, you know, masturbate geopolitically and, you know, I guess we'll pay the price for it because we don't get to see this movie. I think it's complete horseshit.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think these theaters are run by cowards. And I think that I think they really need to sit down and think about the last time that any hacker organization ever did anything violent. Because there hasn't been a situation where a violent terrorist act has been carried out by hackers.
Yeah.
That does not happen.
That's all about information. It's not about...
Yeah. They're fucking nerds. You're effectively worried about the nerds rising up and doing violent things all over the country, which really would be more like the movie Red Dawn. Really, what you're afraid of is that if you show the interview, we will be in a Red Dawn situation, which I don't think is any more politically sound. I just think it's a silly connection to make. Yeah. And I get it. And I kind of read this thing. It's not like they emailed me directly. Like, Brian, here's what's going on. They sent this mass email out, Sony did, that says, and this is a statement and a quote, we stand by our filmmakers and their right to free expression and are extremely disappointed by this outcome. This is the email where they said they're not releasing the movie.
Yeah.
So let me read that one more time. We stand by our filmmakers and their right to free expression. No, you do not.
Not this time.
You canceled the movie.
Yeah.
It's not just that it got pulled from theaters. You canceled the release date.
Hello?
How exactly are you standing by the filmmakers? How are you allowing them to express themselves?
Yeah,
I'm really confused.
Yeah, I've seen some people say, well, don't get mad at Sony, get mad at the 5 theater chains. And I'm like, well, other theater chains like the Alamo Drafthouse were going to play the movie. If Sony was really standing by their filmmakers, they would have just let... you know, the not 5 major theater chains still play the movie.
Like, nope.
I think it would be interesting if they set up a release date in the spring, and then they actually sent somebody from... You know, Sony has the rights to James Bond. Maybe they just send Daniel Craig to take out Kim Jong-un, let this whole thing blow over, and then they release it in the spring.
Maybe that's what Spectre's going to be all about.
That's what Spectre's going to be about.
Could be. I can't help to compare this to the South Park episode where they can't show the image of Muhammad.
Oh, the Family Guy episode.
No, yes.
No. It was the South Park episode about Family Guy.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was a little confusing.
Well, there's a couple, and there's one where they had to get Muhammad to meet with Tom Cruise, and it's sort of an elaborate plot, but whatever. The point is, at one point, Randy said, and here's a picture that I have of Muhammad. And he turned it around, and it was a stick figure, and everybody freaked out. Oh, my God, oh, my God. And it was like, is that okay to show? Is that okay to show?
Yeah, it's like, I'm sorry.
I mean, it's just paranoia.
It's very much paranoia. And the fact that they literally, like, oh, and I want to point this out, too, that somebody over at Ain't It Cool pointed out that the Homeland Security has said there's no credible threat from these hackers.
Yeah.
That the threat is absolutely not credible. So what they're basically saying, Sony and these theater chains, by doing this, is if you even make a vague threat against America, we will pull everything. But we stand by our filmmakers and their right to expression. No, you do not.
Get the fuck out of here!
You are doing exactly the opposite. And frankly, I wasn't even that excited about the movie. You know, I was, you know, like I said, the pedigree of people working on it. I was interested to see what they did next. But it's not a movie I was that excited about. And now you've made me really want to see this movie by telling me that I can't see it. Because... really, I'm a 12-year-old at heart. So it's like, what do you mean I can't do that? I'm going to do that. And I just think they've made a bigger deal. I think JC's absolutely right. If North Korea had really just ignored this whole thing, who cares? Nobody would have cared. It would have been the exact same thing as Team America. How many times people like, oh, the reason that we were able to suppress Kim Jong-il's desire to nuke the whole planet was because of Team America. No, it wasn't. Mm. It has nothing to do with anything. Plus, you live in a dictatorship where you can just tell people the movie doesn't exist and they'll fucking believe you. Because you control everything and you brainwash your people. Just tell them the movie is actually about the glorious victory of your magnificent leader. Re-edit it so that's the case and no one will fucking notice.
Do you have any idea how fucking busy I am?
Idiotic. Absolutely idiotic. North Korea, get a goddamn sense of humor. Oh, and Sony, stop fucking up. All right, moving on down the list here. Matt Ryan wants peripheral vision for Christmas. And this is where we're going to get into our awards. This is actually my Pwn Zone of the Week. Finish him. During the Falcons game against Pittsburgh, linebacker Jason Warilds, I believe it's Warilds, came from the blindest of blind sides. Like Sandra Bullock on steroids blindside to flatten Ryan like the circle in McConaughey's Theory of Time on True Detective. Like it was it was a massive hit. And it was also a clean hit. It was one of the cleanest I'd seen in a while. So of course there was a penalty for roughing the passer. He had the ball. He like the guy wrapped around him, took him down. I'm like, at what point can they can you just put like the quarterback in a big plastic bubble like John Travolta? And that's how they play now. That's how they lead the offense, is from inside a big plastic bubble. But it was a hell of a hit, and Matt Ryan never saw it coming. Like, had no inclination whatsoever. Go for it.
Yeah, so for Christmas, the Oklahoma City Thunder wished their big guys could stop getting dunked on. over the last couple of years, from Timothy Mozgov to Kendrick Perkins, it's usually been Blake Griffin that's been the perpetrator. Last night against Sacramento, Rudy Gay just completely destroyed Serge Ibaka. And Serge Ibaka is one of their young, super athletic bigs, and it's really surprising. He doesn't typically get dunked on like that.
So really, the Oklahoma City Thunder want, like, elevator shoes for their starting line, even their big men, to make them just a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Moving on from there, I'm going to say that C.O. Moore wants for Christmas all of the Step Up movies. C.O. Moore is my cyborg of the week, by the way. The Raiders may have lost again this week, but that didn't stop linebacker C.O. Moore from celebrating each and every big play like he was trying to save a rec center. I mean, I firmly believe he is a dancing machine, programmed only to break up plays and to bust moves. And in fact, Reddit has already put together a meme where they start with text of a life situation and then show Moore dancing, so it's like, when you didn't do your homework and then school gets canceled due to snow, and then it just cuts to him doing these like insane, like he has one that where he just kind of, you know, gets the entire sideline bopping, and then he has this other one where he's like, it looks like he's trying to like throw giant hair off of his forehead. It's really a bizarre thing, but yeah, C.O. Moore's a dancing machine, and definitely we should get him all of the Step Up movies so that he can take it to the streets, so that he can start a revolution, and so he can 3D. Well, that movie should have had a better title. That's not my fault. And of course, we wouldn't be able to finish the show without talking about Johnny Manziel. So, for Christmas this year, Johnny Football wants talent. He is our ultimate frittata of the week. In his NFL start, his first NFL start, his debut as a starting quarterback, how'd he do, JC? How did Johnny Manziel do against division rival the Cincinnati Bengals?
He did really bad. He finished the game with a QBR, which, you know, is a stat that hasn't been around forever. But he finished with a QBR of 1.
You know, I know it's not the only measure of a quarterback success, but when your QBR rating is less than your number, the number that you right. wear, and yeah. you wear number 2, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1 is not good.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. I thought it was like the SATs. I thought you got like 20 just for getting out there, just for writing your name.
I think anybody making jokes about that was like, I thought like mathematically it just kind of started at like 40.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And it was like, he was like Oprah out there. He was given like, you get an interception and you get an interception and you get an interception. And every time, oh, it was so beautiful. Every time somebody picked him off, they did the little money thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And a couple of players got flagged for taunting, and they're like, we don't care.
The one guy that got flagged for taunting, he picked him off 2 plays later. I think the Browns played 38 plays. They generated 5 first downs, 2 of which were penalties of Bengals players taunting Johnny Manziel.
Wow.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. I mean, again, like, I don't mean to gloat and I don't mean to schadenfreude this guy's misery, but he's such a douchebag that it's kind of hard not to. It's kind of hard not to suspect, maybe on some level, that if he paid more attention to the fucking game and actually did his work on the playbook, actually studied the film, and didn't spend every night going to clubs, his entourage getting in fights, taking pictures with famous people, which, by the way, there's some sports radio that actually somebody that knew him when he was in college said all those photos that he was like, the media this and the media that. He was asking people to take those photos. Mm-hmm. That was something that he orchestrated to get more attention. So I've really lost all sympathy for this guy.
And I think a lot of people are just going to try to do the objective thing and be like, well, just a small sample size and you don't necessarily know if he's going to turn.
That's really rude. He can't help that he's short.
Yeah. I'm like,
oh, that's not what you meant by small sample size. Right. I'm sorry.
No, I say cut bait. I just cut your losses where they end. Like, if I had to hedge my bet and I had to go all in on him being kind of okay or him just being a bust, I'm going all in on him being a bust.
Yeah, right.
I know it was one game. I don't typically do things like that on one game. It was so bad. He's so small. The football is so big in his hand.
Right.
His instincts are just bad. Like, at one point, he scrambles and he stops, turns all the way around to look at the players who are behind him, and then looks down the field and throws an interception. Like,
I don't believe that's part of their read to look backwards. No. He'd look downfield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would feel bad again if it weren't for things like they have him like on video during that game. They're getting shut out, which, by the way, they were shut out completely. And he's sitting there on the bench with Brian Hoyer laughing. Yeah. Like, he's having a grand old time. And I'm like, you know what? Laugh it up, fuzzball, because you're not going to be here next year.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, there's positives to gleam from you know, every, like, Blake Bortles isn't having a very good rookie campaign, but there's positives you see in his game.
True.
Nothing to build on from that game. Like, I mean, he can't go anywhere but up, but, like, how much further up can he go? Like,
right. I mean, it's the age old thing. Some college players just can't make the transition to the pros. Mm-hmm. It's just not in there. In this case, maybe he's too short, or, you know, the ball is too big in his hand. I mean, it's just a lot of things that he would have to overcome, and it doesn't appear to me that he has the diligence to try to do that.
Yeah, I think work ethic is a big part of it. Of course, you could make the argument that the player who probably has had some of the best work ethic in the game was Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow couldn't make it, but it was not for lack of trying. Like,
right.
Tim Tebow worked his ass off all the time and just for whatever reason was not able to make that transition. And I actually felt bad for the guy. Johnny Manziel, it's like, I don't even see that you really give a shit about this game. Why are you even here? Just get out, man.
I did kind of want him just to score a late meaningless touchdown just to see if he had the balls to still do the money thing.
Like they're down by 30 and he still does it.
Down by 30, he played so awful. He just duck farts a touchdown to someone when it means nothing, and I just want him to see him do it. Like, I don't know.
So is he supposed to start again?
I mean, they haven't announced that.
I think at this point, he should start just to save Brian Hoyer, because Brian Hoyer actually had great games this year for them, and it's pretty evident to me that Johnny Manziel is not going to be the starting quarterback next year. There's no way in hell, so I don't know. But, you know, it does bring us to a little game we're going to play. I think it's time Johnny Manziel's nickname of Johnny Football was retired. So instead, we're going to go around and we're going to come up with some new nicknames for Johnny Manziel. And my first one is actually very festive. It's very, very Christmas-themed. And it is Rudolph the Red-Faced Washout. Because if you're not embarrassed of yourself after a game like that, if your face isn't red, then you are going to wash out of this league. Because, you know, again, we bring up Eli Manning. When he does have a dopey face, he is a mouth-breathing dummy. But every time he throws an interception, you can tell he's in anguish. Or he's hungry, or he wants to take it. I'm not sure, but it's not an apathetic face, to say the least. There's something there.
I'm going to go with Manziel, the Kegel on the shelf, the elf on the shelf, because he's a better way of naming that, but yeah, he's really small. He's like Kegel, the elf on the shelf.
I like it.
He's very small.
I like it. What do you think, Dad? Is there a new nickname besides Johnny Football? It doesn't have to be that creative. Just
Johnny Junk.
Johnny Junk.
Just junk.
He is junk, both on the field and if he were an investment, he would be a junk bond.
Yeah. I tweeted some out like Johnny throws it to the other team. doesn't have the same ring to it.
It wouldn't make it for a good hashtag, but I think it's accurate is what's good about that. I'm going to go with Johnny Lame Sauce. I think Johnny Lame Sauce would be a good one for him, as well as going back to the festive theme, Johnny Naughty List.
Yeah.
Both on the field and off, he's Johnny Naughty List. He's getting a lump of coal in his stocking. Probably thrown through his window from every angry Cleveland Browns fan, but he'll get some lumps of coal.
Johnny Cent Sign instead of Dollar Sign.
Yeah.
I like that one. I like that one. Johnny, maybe Johnny Water Polo. Maybe he's just in the wrong sport. Maybe the thing is we haven't seen his raw talent in other games, like Johnny Ping Pong or Johnny Badminton. Maybe that would be a good one for him.
Not sure.
Johnny Bottle Service.
Johnny Bottle Service.
Yeah.
Johnny, do you want fries with that? Yeah. No, absolutely. Cool. Well, that was fun. I liked the wish list way of doing all the news and awards. And we obviously can't leave today without talking about fantasy football. Stop the music, stop the music. I think instead of our usual song, we should play this. Because this was the weirdest first round of the playoffs I think I've ever seen. Oh my gosh, this ending was crazier than that Jake Gyllenhaal movie Enemy. Like, it made about as much sense. JC, tell us what happened. There's only two games in the playoffs right now in our Inside the Locker Fantasy Football League, but what happened in both of those games?
You're talking about the, in your league?
No, I mean, I guess it is in my league, sorry.
Yeah. because that goes.
It's the only league that exists, JC.
Because I saw you mention that, and I was like, what is he talking about? And I went and looked in your league, and I was like, oh, that's what he's talking about.
Yes, sorry, I should have made that more clear. In my league, some Twilight Zone shit's going on.
So, yeah, in your league, we mentioned last show that it's a Salisbury Bowl between your brother Blake and you. And the other matchup is Dan Nitsch versus Gary Ramos. Both games ended in ties.
Both of them.
After two weeks. That's pretty amazing.
I would love to know the statistical chance of that happening. Because you're talking about, essentially you're talking about, let's see, four games. Four games, because again, the playoffs take place over 2 weeks.
Right.
So the sum total of 2 weeks in both of those matchups ended in ties.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to me.
It's really crazy when you consider how inconsistent fantasy sports is in general.
Oh, believe me, I considered that.
Yeah, and if you were always scoring 80 points, then, you know, great. But you're all over the board.
I mean,
it's just crazy that it tied.
You're right. So in other words, it had to fluctuate. So if 1 week, you know, these players are doing poorly, these players also had to do poorly and vice versa for it to end in two ties, which means that the next round, we're basically doing the same thing all over again. Well, we've kept our same rankings and everything.
Well, what it looks like it did is it looks like the system just kind of came up with a different way of determining the winners, because the championship round in that one is you versus Gary Ramos.
Really?
Because you won the division.
I think it was division and or points scored, but yeah, that's usually, it's got a way of sorting itself out, but. Yeah.
Then sincere apologies to my brother, because I literally tied that with the one player I had left, who was my quarterback.
Right,
so.
It's got to be frustrating for Blake and for Dan.
For Dan, who was my college roommate. Sorry, buddy.
The system has a way of sorting itself out, and you ended up coming out ahead, so.
I'll take it, because last year I didn't make the playoffs because of some nonsense mathematically, so. What's going on in the other leagues that I totally forgot about because of the weird anomaly I was looking at in our league?
As is typical of me, come playoff time, I just don't have it. And so I lost my matchup to Andrew Catrone.
Catrone.
Yeah. And so that championship is Ryan Dunsmore versus Andrew.
Newly married graphics wizard here at oneofus.net, Ryan Dunsmore is in the finals, as is Andrew Catrone, who's one of our oldest fans. So that's pretty awesome.
In Elliot's league, Elliot is in the championship.
What?
Against Ryan Schreiback.
Really?
Yep.
He's the guy that won the entire thing last year.
Oh,
Ryan Schreiback. So, wow. Okay, this is getting interesting.
And in Adam's league.
Adam is the only one of us who didn't actually make the playoffs. I'm sorry, buddy.
Adam's league, that championship is the London Jaguars, which is Edward Benavidez, versus Preemptive Suspension, which is Jason Flynn.
I like both those names, Preemptive Suspension. All right, well, that's going to be a hell of a thing. And, of course, we're going to do exactly what we did last year, which is once we get down to the champion of each of the four leagues, we're going to put together a trivia contest. Now, if any one of us is in that trivia contest, one of the other guys will come up with the questions. I want that stated. We're going to be as fair as we absolutely can be.
And in our local league, just because...
Oh, yeah, the local league.
So we were hoping for a Salisbury Bowl for the championship for the... I think the money is... $123 for first place, $67 for a second, and then $20 for the third place. You and Blake are playing for third place. So
one of us is going to end up with $20.
Yeah, you guys are playing for money. So, so keep it civil.
We'll try not to fight over it.
Yeah.
Over the one case of Lone Star that will buy us.
Yeah.
But, actually, that'll buy us a case of Lone Star. You know what? I'm looking at the bright side of this. Silver lining all the way.
But so we get Salisbury Bowl Part 2.
That's Blake awesome. And you'll probably tie again.
So sick of having to play against
split
me.
Split the 20 right down the middle.
And Blake is so much better at fantasy football than I am, which just points out yet again why I don't want to play this next year, because Blake is so much better at this, and I'm winning on the stupidest things, which actually brings me to my Rudy of the Week, Drew Brees. Drew Brees, who I was down... I can tell you exactly how many points I was down by, because it's exactly as many points as Drew Brees got.
It's like
so
31.
I think it was 36. Like it was a hell of a lot of points, and he got it like right at the last minute of the game, like right when I was down by 37 points. He got exactly 37 points. So I again apologies to Blake, but he definitely is my Rudy of the Week, my top performing fantasy player. What about you, JC?
I'm going to go with one of my other leagues because it was just such a weird thing, but Aaron Rodgers... Oh, wait, sorry, Rudy. Drew Brees, because he put up a lot of points. Alshon also had a really good game for me, which is good because Jay Cutler decided to throw to him because he didn't really have a choice because Brandon Marshall's out. but, yeah.
Fair enough. What about you, Dad? Who was your top-performing... fantasy football player this week?
Well, they all sucked. It was a really bad week. Actually, as it turns out, the Ravens defense, that turned out to be my best point scorer for this week. And then everybody I had on my bench usually actually ends up being my top scorers as well.
Always happens to me too. And then the flip side of that, of course, is the Fredo.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart.
Who breaks our hearts, yes. And I'm going to go with Justin Forsett. Even though Peyton Manning for the third week in a row had a really shitty game that could have saved me if he played well, Justin Forsett has been a beast for me, has been guaranteed points every single week. Comes away with five damn points in a game against, what, Jacksonville? I'm sorry. You've got to be kidding me. That's one of the worst defenses in the entire league, and you can't run for more than 48 yards. Justin Forsett's my Fredo. How about you, JC?
I mentioned it earlier when I thought we were talking about that. Aaron Rodgers.
He had a really terrible game against Buffalo.
Two interceptions, no touchdowns. Buffalo on a crazy defensive tear right now, just shutting down great quarterbacks left and right.
I will have to eat my words. I said they weren't a good defense, but after they shut down Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers in consecutive weeks, All right, you've impressed me. You have impressed me, Buffalo. It's more than just a fluke. What about you, Dad? Who was your Fredo this week?
The tight end position in general, all year long, inconsistent.
Totally.
I have Julius Thomas, 4 points. I'll have Larry Donnell, 3 points. I mean, they're top 10 guys, but no points.
Yeah.
The only good one all year was the human polar bear Gronk.
Yeah, that's really true.
The world, what did you call him? The world's oldest third grader?
Yeah, the oldest second grader.
Second grader.
He's been the most consistent for sure, but it's just terrible.
Did you see him? He was on some cooking show as like a guest, and he made several references to like the size of his sausage.
Oh,
and
he's
9 years old.
Did you ever see the video? Like, it was right after he got drafted. Him and his friends went to a grocery store and started playing baseball with the stuff in the grocery store. He's an idiot.
Yeah,
he is a dumb little kid. Like Gronk sad. Gronk breaks stuff at grocery store. Gronk what balloon?
Gronk mad.
Gronk bad. All right, well, that's going to do it for Inside the Locker. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody, and we're moving closer to the holidays, so happy holidays to everyone. Please do consider using those Amazon links if you're doing any Amazon shopping, holiday shopping, online at Amazon. Just come here first, click on the pick of the week. It'll take you to Amazon, and then once you're there, anything you buy benefits us. Thank you so much. Please do consider becoming a subscriber. It's another way we can keep bringing you the content that we do, and you get a lot of extra goodies for being a subscriber, including access to The Breakfast Pub, which is our Monday morning geek news show that we do, Chris Cox and I do, online. Great stuff. Follow us on Twitter at ITLcast. You can follow the website at OneOfUsNet, or you can like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/OneOfUsNet. Or you can follow us individually on Twitter. I'm at BryGuySalisbury.
At JCDillion1.
Dad, do you want more followers on Twitter? Do you want to tell them what yours is, or are you good?
At Crockett82.
Crockett as in Crockett and Tubbs?
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. So cool. This is why my dad is awesome. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher as well. But we're going to wrap it up the way we always do, paraphrasing the great Rocket Raccoon. When it comes to sportscasts on the internet, ain't no thing like us, except us.